after-school enrichment class to another, from one prep school to the next, as if those places were actually preparing him for anything other than a corporate job, where he was sure to be surrounded by all the same people he'd grown up with. Those people made him feel sick to his stomach, their chinos and boat shoes, their scuffed leather luggage with their initials on the side. No one cared about anything except whether the boat was going to be ready for Memorial Day. They were shitty to women and to the people hired to help their lives run smoothly. All Andrew had ever dreamed about was living somewhere with the barter system, some place where money meant nothing unless it was all in the collective pool. His Oberlin co-op had been his wet dream, everyone cooking tofu together and baking dense little brown loaves of bread. If Elizabeth had been less type A, and if they hadn't had a baby, they'd still be living like that, with Zoe or whomever. Not that he'd trade a moment with Harry for anything in the world. If he'd done one thing right in his life, it was being a dad. Andrew knew that much for sure. Everything else was the problem. Andrew wanted to push every angry feeling he had down into his stomach and cover it with mulch and love until it was a goddamn flower bed. The house, Dave's house, the collective, was really coming together. The front rooms were used for yoga and meditation classes, open to anyone. If you came to class, or to meditate, or to qigong, someone would slide a finger with essential oils over your temples, and you'd go home smelling like lavender and orange and eucalyptus. They were working on getting the permits or the licenses to serve food, but that seemed legally complicated. It might just be juice. Dave was from California, and it showed. He talked like the words were stuck in the back of his throat, and he had to coax each one out individually. In his most secret thoughts, Andrew believed that he should have been born to a surfing family, the kind who traveled up and down the California-Mexico coast, sleeping in a Winnebago on the beach. Dave didn't say, but Andrew was sure that was his story. Sand in a sleeping bag, the waves crashing at night. A few young women in yoga clothes came into the room. Dave said hello to them, and the women began to roll out a number of yoga mats at the other end of the room, gently placing blankets and blocks beside each place. The women looked no older than Ruby, but then again, Andrew was always surprised by people's ages now. When he was a teenager, anyone over the age of 20 looked like a grown-up, with boring clothes and a blurry face, only slightly more invisible than Charlie Brown's teacher. But life had changed. Now everyone looked equally young, as if they could be 20 or 30 or even flirting with 40, and he couldn't tell the difference. Maybe it was just that he was now staring in the opposite direction.
"We're about to have class," Dave said. "You should stay."
He patted Andrew on the shoulder again, and then stood up and walked over to the women at the front of the room, crouching between them and touching them both on their shoulder blades. Then Dave stood up again and pulled off his T-shirt, displaying his bare chest. He picked up a blanket off a stack, unfolded it, refolded it in a different way, and dropped down to his knees. Dave cupped his hands together on the blanket, nestled the crown of his head into the web of his fingers, and then slowly raised his legs up behind him until he was standing on his head. The two women turned around and nodded at Andrew. One of them pulled her hair into a ponytail, and the other began to stretch, shifting her body this way and that.
"Okay,"
Andrew said, not sure what was about to happen. He crawled forward onto one of the yoga mats on the floor. More people filtered in and took the spaces around him, and pretty soon the room was full, 10 people, maybe 12. At the front of the room, Dave lowered himself back down and came to a lotus position. He lit a few candles and began to chant so quietly that Andrew wasn't sure if it was him or a passing car, a low rumble that got louder and louder until all the other voices joined in, and Andrew could feel the room begin to vibrate. He closed his eyes. Elizabeth would have laughed, but Andrew loved it. It reminded him of when he was little and his older cousins would use him as their hairdressing doll, braiding and brushing his hair for what felt like hours, how good their fingers felt on his scalp. Andrew had tried Reiki before, and that's what was happening in the room. Energy was being pushed around and manipulated in order to heal. He was being healed, even before Dave stopped chanting and asked them to put their hands on their knees and set an intention for their practice. Andrew's intention came to him, clear as a bell. "Be here. Be here. Be here." And when Dave asked them all to move into downward-facing dog pose, Andrew did. He was the oldest person in the room, and he was going to be whatever he was told. Maybe Evolvement needed some shelves built for the yoga equipment, or a small table for the candles so that they didn't sit on the floor. Andrew was going to meditate on it. Chapter 17. Elizabeth backed out of her driveway and drove the 4-second commute to Zoe's house. She didn't even need to put the car in park. Zoe was waiting out front, wearing a sundress and a large floppy hat, and she bounded into the front seat like an excited puppy.
So, what's up first?
Zoe took off her hat and held it in her lap.
I feel very weird about this, but I really want to do it, so just pretend that I'm a regular client and not just your friend having a midlife crisis, okay?
You're the boss, boss. First up are 2 apartments in Fort Greene, Elizabeth said. Very different vibes. The first one is in the Williamsburg Savings Bank, with a view to die for, very mod. The second one is a floor through and a brownstone on Adelphi. Both are really, really nice. She turned on her blinker and made the left onto Cortelyou, heading toward Flatbush. Close to the train, close to restaurants, all that stuff. She looked over at Zoe. And if you want to stop, we'll stop, okay?
Sounds good to me, Zoe said.
She twisted the rings on her fingers.
What else can we see?
There are a couple of condos on the water in Williamsburg and one in Dumbo.
I think I'm too old for Williamsburg.
You're retro, Elizabeth said. You're like a cassette tape. They'll go crazy for you. Zoe slumped over, pretending to be wounded.
Ugh,
she said. Thank you. No, come on, Elizabeth said. You're just going to get the lay of the land, see what feels good. It'll be fun.
Okay,
Zoe said. She flipped down the mirror and patted the skin under her eyes.
Do I look really tired? I have been sleeping like shit, like absolute shit.
She turned toward Elizabeth.
Tell me the truth.
Elizabeth waited for a red light and then swiveled as much as she could in the driver's seat. Zoe did look tired, but they all did. It felt like a minute ago that they could stay up until 2 in the morning and still look like normal, well-adjusted human beings the next day. Now, when she didn't sleep, no amount of drugstore makeup could disguise the bags under her eyes, and that's how Zoe looked, too, even beautiful Zoe.
You do look a little tired, Elizabeth admitted.
Fuck, I knew it, Zoe said. I swear to God, it's all a plot. Jane is trying to make me look like a hideous monster so that no one will ever want to sleep with me ever again, and I'll just pretend to forget that we're unhappy, and then nothing will ever change, and we'll just be sad, lonely 80-year-olds before you know it.
A dollar van cut in front of them, and Elizabeth honked her horn.
I hate driving in Brooklyn.
Zoe rolled her eyes. You sound like my mother.
They drove to the first appointment of the day, an apartment on the 16th floor, overlooking the Barclay Center. Zoe's house would sell quickly if they priced it right, and Zoe wanted to have a better sense of where she wanted to go before they put the house on the market, if they wanted to sell, if they actually split up. It was the kind of maneuvering that would have driven Elizabeth totally crazy, a complete waste of her time and energy, if they hadn't been friends. But they were, and so it seemed like the least she could do. It was the equivalent of fantasy football, she guessed. People who couldn't actually play, pretending that they had some semblance of control over the outcome of games on television.
I could have a sofa over here,
Zoe said, gesturing toward the windows. Or over here, Elizabeth said, gesturing toward the wall opposite.
The kitchen's a little small,
Zoe said, and she was right. It was just a corner of the room, with a few cabinets from IKEA and a cheap, glossy black countertop. She ran a finger over the lip of the stove.
This is a piece of garbage.
Not everyone is married to a chef, Elizabeth said, wanting to make light of it, but it wasn't light at all, and Zoe turned her back.
Not even me, pretty soon, she said,
and it was time to leave. The next apartment was better, warmer. Elizabeth unlocked the door and walked in first, half a step ahead. As soon as she crossed the threshold, she could feel how much more Zoe would like it. No matter what she claimed to want, Zoe liked old things, and no shiny apartment building was going to be the right choice. The second apartment had moldings and curved doorways and 100-year-old windows with wavy glass. She loved it. And there's a shared garden, Elizabeth said, pointing out the back window.
And we're 3 blocks from them.
Zoe clasped her hands together, her silver rings, little punctuation marks between her fingers.
This is a good one, Lizzie.
Elizabeth waited in the front room while Zoe poked around the closets.
Do you want my measuring tape?
She hollered, but Zoe didn't respond. When she was young, Elizabeth had imagined that she would live in a number of houses as an adult. a garret in Paris overlooking a cobblestone street on the beach in California. She and Andrew loved to talk about the possibilities. That was one of the things she'd always liked about her husband, how open he was to ideas. Peru? Sure. New Zealand? Why not? But after Harry was born, and they found their house, it was harder to travel, to be bohemian in the way they'd always imagined they might be. All their money was in that house, and its bricks and plaster, and if they sold it, they would have to ask Andrew's parents for money to move anywhere more desirable, and no one wanted that. Not Elizabeth, not Andrew, not his parents. They'd made the trip from the Upper East Side to Ditmas Park 8 or 9 times, full stop. There were nominal reasons, as if they needed them. Andrew's father walked with a cane, and his mother couldn't be in an enclosed space without the fear of a panic attack, and so had been on the subway only a handful of times in her life. Of course, they could take a car, but the distance was too much, psychologically. It was easier to make an annual pilgrimage in the other direction, up to the limestone and the army of doormen and the manicured medians of Park Avenue. Was it too late for them to leave? Once Harry was out of high school, they would be free to make another choice, to move to an adobe house in Santa Fe. But could they make friends at 50? Maybe it was better to wait until they were 75, old enough to move to a retirement community, a place on the coast of South Carolina that offered shuffleboard and karaoke. Andrew would rather die. Marfa, maybe, or a place upstate near the Omega Institute. No place where they'd be surrounded by people like his parents. Sometimes Elizabeth looked at her husband, and for a split second, he looked identical to the way he did as a 24-year-old, with his sharp chin and his hooded eyes. He was so much angrier than Harry, even now, after decades of trying to be the opposite of how he was raised. Sometimes it worked, and sometimes it didn't. When Andrew got upset, she could see the fury rise in his face like on a cartoon, red, 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 until his head exploded. Most of the time, he was able to dial it back down, but sometimes, rarely, he still exploded. Harry had only seen it happen a few times in his life, and every time he had immediately burst into tears, the fire extinguisher to his father's 4-alarm blaze. They worked in both directions, actually. Whenever Harry was undone, by a broken toy or a skinned knee, Andrew swooped into action, calm and comforting, a perfect nursemaid. Elizabeth was grateful for that, for their joint sweetness. It was so hard to tell when a child's personality would harden and fix, but it seemed true that Harry was kind and quiet, a good boy. "Whew," Zoe said, appearing at Elizabeth's side. "I like this one a lot." She bent forward at the waist and touched her toes. "I could live here, I think." "That's great," Elizabeth said. "I mean, you can't live here, unless you want to move before you sell your house, or unless you want to buy this place and keep it empty for 6 months. But it's good to know what you're looking for." "Oh," Zoe said. "Right."
"Or the timing could work out. You never know how slowly people are going to move. We could hurry up with your house and drag our heels over here, and if you're not bidding against multiple other offers, it could work."
They hadn't talked about a real schedule. Once the balls were in the air, things were going to get messy. The room got a little bit wobbly for a second, while both Elizabeth and Zoe suddenly imagined the fantasy becoming a reality. But fantasy was the wrong word. A fantasy was a thatched hut on a faraway beach. A fantasy was a white horse and a castle. The idea of Zoe actually getting divorced, of her being single, was actually horrifying. It was a choice people made all the time to end a marriage, but it had never happened to them. And they looked at each other for a minute, both grim-faced. If Zoe and Jane could do it, so could she, Elizabeth thought, the notion flickering across her brain quickly and vanishing like a phantom mosquito.
"Can we just sit here for a while?" Zoe asked.
"Sure," Elizabeth said. They had other appointments later in the day, but mostly she just had keys to empty apartments like this one, and spending a few extra minutes wasn't going to throw off their schedule. This was how decisions got made in her business, sitting in empty rooms, listening to people's daydreams about furniture and imaginary children. They sat down on the floor of the living room, or what would become the living room when someone moved in. Elizabeth sat with her legs stretched out in front of her, crossed at the ankles, and Zoe leaned against the opposite wall with her knees bent. The wood floors were gleaming, with defiant dust bunnies forming in the corners of the room. It was nearly impossible to keep an empty space completely clean.
"I've been walking through the house, making imaginary lists of what's mine and what's hers," Zoe said.
It's surprisingly easy.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
Zoe ticked the items off on her fingers.
The nice rugs are mine. The kitchen stuff is hers. The trunk we got at the flea market is mine.
The records are mine, mostly. The ugly fucking lamp that I've always hated is hers.
Plus Bingo.
Bingo is non-negotiable.
Zoe rolled her head back so that Elizabeth was looking at her throat.
Ruby, on the other hand.
What's going on with Rube?
It's all so typical.
Zoe shifted her head forward again and smacked her lips.
Teenage girls are teenage girls.
Do you remember what giant assholes we were?
Or you weren't, but I was.
Ruby is kind of a giant asshole right now.
Not always. When she has a stomach ache or the flu and she feels awful, then she'll still crawl into bed with me and cuddle up and let me pet her. But otherwise, forget it. She treats me like a warden. Not even the nice warden who gives you extra soap, but the mean one with the nightstick. It's horrible.
What about Jane?
Elizabeth had often observed Ruby acting like an asshole over the course of her life, but it was an awareness she tried to suppress. Not liking your friend's kids was worse than not liking your friend's spouses. And it wasn't that Elizabeth didn't like Ruby. She was often funny and dark in a way that Elizabeth found amusing. But there was a touch of the asshole there, it was true. You couldn't ever say that, though, no matter how true it was. When the kids were little, she and Zoe had been friends with another mom in the neighborhood, and this lady's kid was so horrible that they both mentioned it to her. That he seemed like a miniature serial killer in training, and she stopped speaking to them. Pretty soon, she moved out of the neighborhood, and Elizabeth guessed it was to move closer to whatever prison facility her son was bound to wind up in. People just didn't want to hear it.
Jane is hopeless. She doesn't even try.
Which, of course, makes it so much easier. Jane and Ruby can go eat 1,000 chicken wings together and not say more than 3 words, and they're fine, like a couple of frat boys. Ruby never says she hates Jane. She only hates me.
Ruby does not hate you, Zoe, Elizabeth said.
Zoe crossed her fingers. Remember when all you had to worry about was how much breast milk they were eating and what their poop looked like? She laughed. Parenthood is the only job that gets progressively harder every single year, and you never, ever, ever get a raise.
I'll give you a raise, Elizabeth said. She stood up and offered Zoe a hand.
Harry said he'd been hanging out with her in their SAT class. Did you know that?
I am more likely to learn about my daughter from the mailman than I am to get any information directly, Zoe said.
But that's nice.
Chivalry, I guess.
I suppose, Elizabeth said. She started to describe the look on Harry's face when he'd mentioned it. Though he tried so hard to be casual, his cheeks were tight with disbelief and happiness. But she stopped herself. Ruby, like Zoe, had a long life of adoration ahead of her, and Elizabeth didn't feel she needed to fuel the fire. No matter how old you got, there were certain things that clung from childhood. A cool girl meanness or a nerdy girl's pining for someone who wouldn't want her back. Elizabeth saw so much of herself in Harry, even in his silent crushes, the secrets he thought he kept. It was hard to be a boy, just like it was hard to be a girl.
Let's go, Elizabeth said, and she opened the front door, happy to have the noise on the street come into the apartment and fill it with something other than her own thoughts.
Chapter 18. Ruby didn't love the idea of working at the restaurant, but her mothers didn't really give her a choice. It was either work as a hostess at Hyacinth or get a job somewhere else, and anywhere else would require, at the very least, a resume and an interview, not to mention the clothes she would have to buy at Banana Republic or wherever else lame people with boring jobs bought their gray pantsuits and white button-down shirts. Chloe was in France all summer, and Paloma was at her parents' country house for the month of June until she left for a month in Sardinia at her parents' cottage. Ruby didn't miss them. Sarah Dinnerstein was around all summer, and Ruby wished she weren't. As soon as graduation was over, Ruby knew that the whole thing had been a setup. Not the ceremony itself, but the years preceding it. She wanted to go into a witness protection program somewhere in the middle of Wyoming, learn to break horses, maybe marry a cowboy, spit in a can for fun. Anything to get out of Brooklyn and her own life. But here she was. Allie, the current hostess at Hyacinth, who had also been Ruby's babysitter, seemed to have left abruptly, but that happened a lot in the service industry. Her mom said they needed someone fast, and nothing was faster than Ruby. She agreed to work the lunch shift, which was always slow during the week, and then the brunch shift plus dinner after her class on Saturdays and from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sundays.
which was always like being an infantry soldier on a very crowded battlefield. Ruby herself found brunch to be an infantilizing meal, but as her mothers loved to remind her, those long afternoons of eggs and mimosas paid for her tuition. The least she could do was show people to their tables and tell them to enjoy themselves. She didn't have to like it. The hostess stand was near the door, across from the bar. Jorge, the daytime bartender, was also a stand-up comedian, and he liked to practice on Ruby while she sat and waited for people to come in. He was an okay bartender, but not a very good comedian. The current bit was about how no one watched commercials anymore, and though Ruby wasn't really paying attention, it seemed to have something to do with a bunch of old white guys sitting around a boardroom table complaining. Jorge was going to be a bartender forever. Ruby laughed charitably when he stopped talking, because she assumed he was finished. She had her phone behind the stand and was playing Candy Crush, level 24.
"Hello, did you see him or not?"
Jorge was drying off glasses with a dish towel, twisting and stacking, twisting and stacking. "What are you even talking about?" Ruby glanced up from her phone. Jorge pointed to the left corner of the window.
"Look over here! You know this white kid, Casper the Ghost? He's been walking back and forth for like 5 minutes, just staring at you."
Ruby shut her phone off and hopped down from the stool. She tiptoed to the end of the bar and peeked out the window. Dust was standing with his skateboard perched on his toe, leaning against the storefront of the Mexican bakery next door.
"Oh, shit,"
Ruby said, and scurried back to her post.
"You know him?"
Jorge asked.
"Do I need to go tell him to scram?"
"Scram? Are you still pretending to be an old man? I can't tell." "No, thank you. I can handle this myself. I'll be right back."
Ruby tossed Jorge a stack of menus. "Just in case." She tucked her hair behind her ears and pulled open Hyacinth's heavy front door.
"Hey,"
she said to Dust. He was smoking and staring off into space, two of his favorite hobbies.
"What are you doing, you stalker?"
Dust saw her walking toward him and smiled. He opened his arms wide for a hug. Ruby smacked his hands away and crossed her arms over her chest. "What are you doing here?"
"I wanted to see you, and I heard you were working."
Dust licked the pointy edge of his chipped tooth.
"Eyes around the corner. It's not some weird stalker shit."
Dust did have a friend who lived on Westminster. His name was Nico, and he grew marijuana in his closet and in the window boxes outside his bedroom.
"Fine," Ruby said. "Now you've seen me."
She didn't move.
"So, is that kid like your boyfriend now? Your little private school ninja bodyguard? Looked kind of young for you."
Dust cocked his head to the side.
"You don't miss me?"
Ruby did miss Dust, sort of, but she would rather have been eaten alive by sewer rats than admit it. Mostly she missed his body, and that broken tooth. It was fun to talk to someone who knew how to flirt, and how to flirt while riding a skateboard. Harry had no idea how to flirt. That was entertaining, too, in its own way, but sometimes Ruby got tired of feeling like Mrs. Robinson. She had already decided that she would kiss Harry back if he ever tried anything. But now it was getting to the point where Ruby had to decide if she actually wanted to kiss him enough to do it herself. Whitman was small. If Harry had ever kissed anyone before, she would probably know it. There was no hiding anything. The whole school was packed so tight that you had to squeeze past couples making out by their lockers, not like in the movies where there were bleachers and football fields and stuff. The back staircase was where you could see real action, and Ruby herself had done some serious business there. Harry Marks on the back stairs? That would be like seeing Dust in an SAT prep course. It just didn't compute. That maybe was some practice.
"I have to go back to work," Ruby said.
"Text me,"
Dust said. He winked at her and dropped his board to the pavement and was zooming away before she could say no. Chapter 19. Elizabeth didn't like to think of herself as anal, but she did like things to be a certain way. She could have been an architect if she'd cared more about math. It was why she was good at her job. There were so many offer sheets, comp sheets, pages and pages of contracts, and Elizabeth's were always in spotless order. It just felt good to have everything in its rightful place. She wasn't sure about godliness in general, but if she were, then cleanliness would definitely have been next to it. She was organizing the guest room when she noticed that her storage boxes were in the wrong order. Everything was chronological. Her childhood things, Andrew's childhood things, Kitty's mustache memorabilia, files of old letters, Harry's childhood things. The Kitty's mustache box was all the way to the right-hand side of the shelf, three spaces over from where it should have been, and the top had been put on backward. Elizabeth slid the box out and set it down on the floor. She knew every piece of paper in the box, every press clipping, every photo. At first, she saved things just because it seemed like a special time in her youth, but after Lydia died, it seemed more important than that. No one else had pictures of Kitty's mustache's first practice, or of Lydia with her drumstick sitting on a dorm room floor. No one else had pictures of Lydia smiling, wearing a sweatshirt with a ponytail. These were cultural artifacts, like dinosaur bones. They were proof of previous life, and as precious to Elizabeth as her wedding pictures. There were a few pictures missing, two band photos, including Elizabeth's selfish favorite, the one where she thought she looked like a high priestess, with the dark lipstick and the long black skirt. She'd bought the dress for $7 at the Illyria Salvation Army, and it was so long that it dragged on the ground behind her, which meant that the polyester began to unravel and wear after a few months of constant contact with the sidewalk.
Andrew?
Elizabeth called.
Yeah.
It sounded like he was in the kitchen.
Can you come up here?
She leafed through. There were three things missing total, she was pretty sure.
Hey,
Andrew said, eating an apple.
What's up?
Did she go for my pictures? Take anything? Elizabeth held up one of the band portraits. Remember your flannel face?
Andrew shook his head. God, I haven't looked at those in forever.
He stepped into the room and plucked the picture out of Elizabeth's hand.
Man, we look fucking cool, right?
Or do we not?
You look incredible.
I think we do. Or did. I think we did. You still look like that. She kissed him on the cheek. Andrew handed the photo back and took another bite of his apple, sending a juicy mist into the air.
Don't spray my memories, Elizabeth said, wiping off the photo on her shirt. It's so weird, but I'm pretty sure there are some things missing. You don't think Harry would have taken them, do you?
She lowered her voice.
Is he in his room?
Andrew nodded. Elizabeth tucked the picture back in the box and stood up, dusting off her fingers. She squeezed past Andrew and knocked on Harry's bedroom door. Once she heard his muffled reply, Elizabeth turned the knob and opened the door. Harry was sitting cross-legged on his bed, an SAT study guide splayed open in front of him. He had his giant headphones around his neck, which made his head look shrunken, as if he'd gotten into a fight with the voodoo shaman.
Hey, Mom,
Harry said. There were dark circles under his eyes. Elizabeth had never seen him look that way before, like he hadn't been sleeping enough. She wanted to scoop him up in her arms and rock him back and forth, even though he probably weighed as much as she did.
Hi, honey,
Elizabeth said. She didn't know why she was asking him. Harry had never taken anything that wasn't his, not a pack of gum from the supermarket, not an extra piece of Halloween candy out of a neighbor's bowl. He didn't fib. Harry was their little golden ticket. Whenever she got together with other mothers of kids in his class, she would listen to them complain and rail against the demons living in their houses, and Elizabeth would just smile and nod politely.
This is probably silly, but did you happen to be in my storage boxes?
She pointed to the wall.
You know, in the guest room?
Harry would have made any poker player very, very happy. His face melted instantly, and his lower lip began to wobble. He said. Elizabeth took another step into the room, her hands on the edges of the door.
Honey, what is it?
He was trying not to cry.
It was just a couple of things. I didn't know you'd miss them. If I'd known, we wouldn't have done it.
Who's we?
Elizabeth asked. Harry's friends were the sort with glasses and dirty sneakers, the sort of boys who'd worn sweatpants to school long after they should have. Arpad, Max, Joshua, those boys weren't thieves. Together, they were a motley crew, like the geeks she remembered from her own high school days, with squared-off glasses and overbites.
Me and Ruby?
Harry said.
She thought they were worth a lot of money.
He temporarily brightened, thinking this information might scuttle him out of trouble.
And she was right. We're already way past the reserves. Look.
He opened his laptop and clicked some keys, then spun the computer screen toward his mother. Sure enough, there were her photographs on eBay, each going for over $200 already. Hair, Elizabeth said. It was unlike him in so many ways. Too entrepreneurial, too sneaky, too thoughtless. Andrew poked his head in.
Did you find them?
Oh, we found them all right. Ruby Con Bennett put them on eBay.
She grabbed the computer from Harry's bed and showed Andrew the screen.
Are you kidding? What are you going to do next, sell the television for drug money?
Andrew frowned, his forehead creases deepening into hard lines, as even as ruled paper.
I'm sorry,
Harry said. He shrugged.
I mean, I guess I knew I shouldn't, but Ruby thought it wasn't a big deal and that we'd make all this money.
Which you were going to do what with? Buy your mother flowers?
Andrew's voice was veering close to a shout, which made Elizabeth's ears ring. He never yelled at his son, maybe 3 times in the last 16 years. Elizabeth knew how important it was to him to keep his temper in check. It had been a problem in their youth, Andrew always flying off into the stratosphere with rage over something totally inconsequential. But since the birth of their son, it had vanished almost completely.
I don't know, Harry said. I hadn't thought that far ahead.
His cheeks were bright red.
Andrew, relax,
Elizabeth said. She was upset that Harry had taken the pictures, but it was so clear, so perfectly obvious, that it wasn't his fault. He was under Ruby's spell.
It was Ruby's idea.
And that makes it better? I'm going to call Zoe, right now.
He slid his phone out of his back pocket and dialed Zoe's cell. In the band, there had been 2 distinct teams, Elizabeth and Zoe, and Lydia and Andrew. It wasn't that Andrew and Zoe weren't friends, officially. It was just that they weren't friends, actually. Sometimes Elizabeth wondered what her life would have been like if she'd hit it off with Lydia instead of Zoe. What dominoes that would have sent knocking together.
Oh my God,
Harry said. He dropped his face into his hands.
It's not your fault,
Elizabeth said. He'd been taken hostage, simple as that. In the hall, Andrew's voice got louder and louder, and Elizabeth walked over to the bed and put her arms around her son. Chapter 20. After screaming at Zoe, and then Jane, about their delinquent daughter's theft, Andrew took a walk around the block, walking away from the Con Bennetts, just in case the 3 of them were staring out the window and ready for a rematch. He could feel his blood pumping in his ears. Andrew exhaled loudly through his mouth, once and then again. Harry's offense wasn't so horrible, he knew that, but it was sneaky and wrong, and it was because Zoe was as shitty a mother as she was a person. She'd always been totally self-centered, and Elizabeth couldn't see it. The way Zoe treated her like a dog, worse than a dog. Zoe loved her dog, but Andrew wasn't sure she felt the same way about his wife. Andrew was at evolvement before he realized that that's where he was headed. He took the stoop steps 2 at a time. The door was open, and there was a meditation group in session. A girl with 2 braids pinned to the top of her head motioned him in, pointing to a blanket toward the front of the room where Dave was sitting. Andrew climbed over everyone as quietly as possible and sank to his seat. He closed his eyes and felt better already. He sat in silence for an indeterminate amount of time. It could have been 15 minutes, it could have been an hour. Dave rang a singing Tibetan bowl to reawaken the room, and they all started to move their bodies, sliding their hands over their knees and faces. When Andrew opened his eyes, Dave was looking right at him, smiling. He hadn't seen the upstairs and was excited when Dave offered the full tour. Like the first floor, the stairs in the upstairs hall had all been painted white, and the only rugs and curtains were white as well, which made the space seem much more open than it really was. Most of the houses in Ditmas were Victorian, which was code for small, dark rooms with lots of wood. But this house had been ripped apart by enough owners that none of the original millwork remained. Young people walked around barefoot, the soles of their feet making gentle sucking sounds. It wasn't like one of the yoga studios in the slope, where everyone was wearing $90 yoga pants, all the logos on their asses lining up perfectly when they were in downward-facing dog. These kids were wearing whatever they wanted, shorts and t-shirts and filmy little dresses. One kid standing near the kitchen was wearing a headband with flowers on it and an open robe, a millennial Hugh Hefner. Andrew ran his hand up the banister. He and Elizabeth had always been on the minimal side of things, but being an evolvement made him want to get rid of everything unnecessary. He wanted blank walls, open windows.
This is one of the body treatment rooms, Dave said. Reiki, massage. We have so many talented body workers in our community.
He kept walking with Andrew a half step behind. This is another treatment room. A young woman was lying on her back while another dripped something onto her forehead.
Ayurveda.
So who lives here?
Andrew asked.
Right now there's 6 of us, me, Jessie, who I think you've met.
Dave pointed to the girl with the braids,
3 artists in residence, plus Salome, who leads the Cosmic Trances on Friday nights.
She's amazing. You should come. The vibes in this house are incredible.
I swear, for 3 days after, the whole place is still vibrating.
I will,
Andrew said. There were more rooms, bedrooms filled with potted ficus trees and rubber plants, rooms with futons and candles and musical equipment. Every so often, a young woman or man would squeeze by them slowly, touching Dave on the arm and then smiling. Andrew never wanted to leave.
Do you need any help building things around here?
He asked.
I've been getting into woodworking. I'd love to help.
Dave clapped Andrew on the back. He smelled like sage and sandalwood.
That would be great, man. We'd love that. And if you ever need to crash here, go right ahead. There is always room in a bed.
Thanks, Andrew said.
It wasn't clear if the beds Dave was offering already had people in them or not, but it seemed like it. Jessie, the girl with the braids, walked quickly toward them, her feet in ballerina turnout. She held a small cup in each hand.
You guys have to try this juice I just made, she said.
They each took one and raised it to their lips. The juice was green and pulpy, leaving stringy pieces in between Andrew's teeth. Dave seemed to have no trouble sucking it down.
What's in it?
Andrew asked after he swallowed. There was a funny taste, medicinal, lingering in the back of his throat.
Kale, chili peppers, anise, apple, orange, St. John's wort, a few other things. It's good, right?
Delicious, Dave said.
He pulled on his beard.
Mmm.
That's right,
Jessie said. She took a few tiny steps forward and kissed Dave on the mouth. Then she pirouetted around and walked back the way she'd come. There was nothing about youth that was fair. The young hadn't done anything to deserve it, and the old hadn't done anything to drive it away. Andrew thought about Harry and the stolen photos and Ruby and her purple hair. And even though part of him wanted to call Zoe and Jane back and yell at them even more, mostly he wanted to know how it was that he wasn't the child anymore, how his baby boy had become a teenager, and how it was possible that he, Andrew Marks, would soon be 50. It didn't matter what any listicle said about how 50 was the new 30. Harry was going to start having sex, and Andrew was going to be a grandfather, and then Andrew was going to be dead. It was a chain of events that he couldn't stop, even if he had all of his parents' money. They had tried, the sports cars in the garage at the country house in Connecticut, the skin treatments his mother had every 3 months, and an attempt to erase the lines and spots from her face. But it was all a pathetic Hail Mary. Andrew just wanted to pause time for a little while, to pretend that he was still young enough to do something that mattered. He wanted to drink juice and sit in a quiet room and wait for all the young bodies around him to dance. Chapter 21 Harry had been weighing the decision for weeks, 3 weeks, every day since Ruby's graduation. He was going to kiss her, with tongue. If that's what she wanted, if she let him. It was unclear how exactly to make a kiss happen. They had to be alone, obviously, and they had to be sitting close enough together that Harry didn't have to lunge across the room like a zombie, eyes closed and mouth open. Other than that, though, he really wasn't sure. He and Ruby hadn't spoken since the grand theft of 2014. Harry's parents had gone crazy, as if Ruby had taken nuclear bomb codes from the president's briefcase. It really didn't seem like that big a deal, or at least it hadn't before they'd been discovered. Harry hated being in trouble, but he also hated that Ruby was now going to think he ratted her out. He'd been trying to figure some casual way to tell her that he hadn't narked on them, but so far all he had was a text that said, hey, with the emoji for a bomb and the ghost sticking out his tongue. It wasn't quite there yet. It was Friday morning. He'd done nothing all week. On Wednesday, he went to see a crappy movie with Yuri, one of his few friends from Whitman who wasn't off doing something glamorous all summer long. Most kids were at their summer houses or backpacking across New Zealand or Israel or France. Yuri lived in Windsor Terrace and was working at a Starbucks and made Harry free iced coffees when he visited. On Friday, Harry and his parents went to the Tibetan restaurant by the train. The entire time, all week long, Harry had been thinking about walking into his SAT class and worrying about whether Ruby would still sit next to him. There were 3 houses for sale in their neighborhood, and his mom was working them all. One down by Newkirk, one at the end of their block, and one over on Stratford. Sometimes she dragged Harry along when she was setting up her things. He liked to fill the giant glass bowls with the Granny Smith apples, that kind of thing. It all seemed so goofy, but his mother swore that it worked, as if someone would say, I freaking love apples. I need to buy this house. Mostly, though, it meant that his mother was AWOL most of the time, and so was his dad. Because the bidding wasn't over yet, Elizabeth was able to take down the listing on eBay. Zoe and Ruby had brought the pictures back, and Zoe stood there in the doorway while Ruby apologized to Elizabeth. Harry sat on the stairs, cringing. It was his fault, too, and he was technically in trouble, but everyone involved knew that he never would have done it without Ruby. Her voice was flat and even, just this side of insolence. Elizabeth nodded and offered her terse thanks, and then Zoe and Ruby were gone. Harry thought he saw Ruby wink at him quickly on her way out the door, but he was probably seeing things. He held his phone in his hand all night long, waiting for a message, but none came. Harry slid out of bed and pulled on his jeans, still sitting in a crumpled pile on the floor, as if he'd just evaporated out of them. He swabbed some deodorant under his arms and shuffled into the hallway.
"Dad?"
There was no answer. Harry poked his head up the stairs toward his parents' bedroom.
"Dad?"
Still no answer. His father was almost always home. When Harry was small, he actually believed that his father didn't sleep, but instead just sat in a corner of a room, waiting to be played with, like the biggest toy in the house. Harry walked slowly up the stairs. His parents' room was empty except for Icky Pop, who was still curled up in a ball at the foot of the bed. Harry wondered if Ruby had gotten grounded, or if she'd ever been grounded. Being grounded was such an ancient concept, like feudalism, or jazz being cool. It had no place in modern society. Parents couldn't even take away phones or computers, not really, because then how could you call for help if you were run over by a bus on the way to school? And how could you turn in your reading logs and science worksheets? It would be like giving your kid an abacus and sending him off to his calculus final exam. His mother's laptop was sitting open on her small desk, which was against the far wall, away from the windows. Harry sat down and clicked the mouse. Her computer woke up, a photo of Harry and Iggy asleep on the couch together a few years ago as the background. Without thinking about it, Harry clicked the mail icon on the bottom of the screen, and Elizabeth's email inbox leaped up, alert and dinging. He wasn't a snoop. His mother's emails were boring. Of the 50 or so emails in her inbox, half of them were from work, and the rest seemed to be junky things that she should unsubscribe from. Harry tried to tell her how to do it, how easy it was to click a few buttons and not get 100 emails a day from the container store or whatever, but she didn't listen. Ruby was right. His mother was obsessive, but not about everything. Her email inbox looked like it belonged to a hoarder with an online shopping addiction. He scrolled through for a minute, checking to see if Ruby's moms had written, if they'd said anything about him. It wasn't like him to read someone else's private correspondence, but Harry felt bad. Felt bad that Ruby had probably gotten into trouble and all he'd gotten into was a hug. His parents were so sure that he'd never do anything wrong, that he wasn't capable of it. And all that love and trust made Harry want to rob a bank. And so he started reading. It was a low-level crime, but it was a crime, and that's what counted. There was one from Zoe, but the whole email thread was just about apartments. He copied down some of the links so he could show them to Ruby, but there wasn't anything juicy. It was sad, the idea of one of her mothers moving out. Which one would go? Would Ruby get to stay, or would they both move? Even so, Harry pictured Ruby rolling her eyes at the notion of real estate as juicy information. A truly cutting-edge wooing tactic for a teenage boy. He kept scrolling. About halfway through her inbox, there were a few flagged emails from someone named Naomi Vandenhoevel. The first one had the subject, "My tattoo misses you," which made it look like it was written by some weird bot, but she'd written again and again subjects, "Mistress of Myself Film, VIP, VIP, VIP. Hi again, contract deadline for Kitty's mustache. Hi, 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 it's me, Naomi." The last one seemed to be dictated via Siri. Harry read them all, one after the other. This is what he put together. A crazy woman named Naomi was trying to get his mother and father to agree to sell the rights to Mistress of Myself for a movie about Lydia. A biopic. Like Ray or Walk the Line. The kind of movie that would win someone an Oscar, especially if they really sang. And it wasn't even like they'd have to actually be a good singer to sing like Lydia. Harry had never liked the way Lydia sounded. His mom was a much better singer, technically. Anyone who had ever watched American Idol or The Voice knew when someone was singing out of tune, and that was Lydia's specialty, sliding in and out of tune and screeching like she'd just dropped a toaster into her bathtub. So far, Elizabeth had been putting her off, but crazy Naomi, he couldn't lie, the tattoo picture was kind of hot, was persistent as hell. No wonder his mom had been going through the Kitty's mustache stuff. Most of the time, Harry didn't think much about how his parents had been cool. It mattered to his daily life significantly less than English muffins, slightly more than the existence of remote control helicopters. He was glad that they were interesting and interested, that they read books and went to the movies, which wasn't true for all of his friends' parents. His friend Arpad's father was a surgeon, and no one ever saw him. It was like he was a ghost who left expensive things lying around the house in an attempt to get you to solve his murder. Harry's parents were present. They were nice to him. It was boring in a good way. And so Harry wasted very little time thinking about how, when they were his age, they had actually been cool. It sucked to feel as if your parents, your embarrassing, dorky parents, had been invited to parties that you would never get invited to, had done drugs no one had ever offered you, had stayed up all night talking to other cool people just because they wanted to. Harry wanted to stay up all night. He wanted to outdust dust. He wanted to take Ruby's hand and lead her somewhere she'd never been, and to do it with such confidence that she never once questioned that he knew where he was going. The past was the past. Harry was ready to be someone new. What was the masculine form of mistress? The mister. He was going to be the mister of himself, starting now. He wrote his parents a text that he was going to spend Saturday night at Arpad's, that he was going there right after his SAT class. His mother texted back some smiley faces and some kisses. He had a day to change the entire trajectory of his life. Simple as that. Chapter 22. Elizabeth was in the mood for chicken. It was also the only thing they had in the fridge, so it was what they were having for dinner. She'd often thought that being as close as they were to Jane and Zoe should yield some high-level kitchen skills, but so far it hadn't. Elizabeth could appreciate good food. She'd been to most of the city's best restaurants with her in-laws, Andrew always pulling at his shirt collar like an awkward bar mitzvah boy, but she could never figure out how to replicate those beautiful meals using her own two hands. There were only so many ways to cook things, boiling water, pans, oven, and yet other people seemed to do it so naturally. Whenever she dropped by Zoe's house for lunch, one of the three of them would be eating some bowlful of brown rice and hard-boiled egg and sautéed kale with an avocado miso dressing that they just whipped up. Leftovers, they'd say, sheepish, as if it weren't something that could easily be on the menu at Hyacinth. When Elizabeth felt sheepish about her food, it was because she was an adult with a teenage son, and she still counted frozen pizzas among her chief food groups. It wasn't easy to have a best friend who seemed so much better at so many of life's important skills. Maybe it was that she and Andrew had been together so long, or gotten together when they were still so young, or that they'd started out as friends. But Elizabeth couldn't remember ever experiencing the all-consuming, life-eating early love that Zoe had found with Jane. They'd disappear into Zoe's bedroom for days. They'd play cutesy and irritating games of footsie at restaurants. They'd go away for long weekends without a moment's notice. Not to mention the kissing. Elizabeth had never seen so much kissing. In taxicabs, in their kitchen, on the sofa. Never mind if there were other people present. Next to their romance, Elizabeth felt like she and Andrew were an incestuous brother and sister, or maybe close first cousins. They had always enjoyed sex, but even Andrew had never seemed to need her body the way that Jane needed Zoe, and vice versa. On the one hand, it had made the slide into long-term marriage easier, because they were already comfortable with a lower level of intensity. But Elizabeth had sometimes wondered what it was like to feel that kind of desire and to send it back, gulping, even if it meant for a sharp letdown in the years to follow. Because no one could keep that up, not even Zoe. Harry zipped through the kitchen, head down, hurrying toward his backpack, which was in its usual slump by the coat rack. "Hey," Elizabeth said. "Where are you going? Hungry?"
"Not right now," Harry said. He grabbed his bag and ran back up the stairs.
Elizabeth rinsed off the chicken breasts in the sink and put them on a plate. Even before she'd married Jane, Zoe had been good in the kitchen. When they'd lived together at Oberlin, Elizabeth had once washed Zoe's cast-iron pan with a sink full of dishes, scrubbed it for hours with a soapy sponge, and when she realized what Elizabeth was doing, Zoe had given her a look like she'd just shaved off her eyebrows while she was sleeping. The Bennets were California gourmets, all farm-raised and organic before it was cool. Elizabeth thought about her childhood diet of Oreo cookies and jars of Skippy peanut butter and felt embarrassed all over again. Her parents were fine. They were good enough people, and she loved them. But her mother had always liked gin more than vegetables. Her father cooked a bloody steak on the grill every Sunday, and that was it. He took pills to make the bad cholesterol go down and the good cholesterol go up, and he had never told her that he loved her, not directly. They never listened to music. Her mother read novels, but only love stories starring beautiful blind girls or war widows. There was so much that Elizabeth had had to figure out on her own. Andrew came quietly down the stairs and hugged her from behind. "Hi," he said, and laid his head against her shoulder. "Hi," she said. "Are you okay? I feel like you've been MIA.
"I actually feel great," Andrew said.
He slid one hand into Elizabeth's waistband, and she wriggled away.
"I have raw chicken hands," she said.
"I'll take a little salmonella."
He kissed her neck.
"Oh, stop it,"
Elizabeth said, elbowing him gently but happy for his nuzzling affection. "Where have you been?" Andrew paused.
"Here's this new place over in Stratford, a yoga studio, sort of. I went to a class today."
"Oh, yeah? That's good. We need a new one." Elizabeth was always looking for new businesses to add to her roster. There was nothing that young homebuyers wanted more than yoga studios and restaurants, as if they'd be young forever and looking for ways to fill their days.
"Hey, so have you thought about it at all? About the Lydia thing?"
She turned toward her husband. He'd always been weird about Lydia. They were buddies, but as soon as she left school, Andrew never mentioned her again. It was as if she died. And then when she did die, he'd bristle at the sound of her name. Lydia's death had made Elizabeth feel softer toward her weirdly, as if there were nothing she could have done, as if it weren't just that Lydia had never liked her. It was that she had much bigger problems. It wasn't exactly nice, but it was comforting. Maybe if he saw the movie, he'd understand. He'd see how young they all were, how beautiful and ridiculous. Andrew leaned against the stove. She watched his face cloud over, as quickly as a thunderstorm in July.
"I really don't want to do it," he said finally. "I really don't. I know you think it's stupid, but it means something to me."
"But I wrote the song."
Elizabeth was usually careful not to phrase things this way. Bands were about equality, marriages too. It rarely did any good to claim complete ownership. Feelings were hurt and resentment so easily built. In this case, the division of labor was clear. Elizabeth Johnson, lyrics. Andrew Marks, Lydia Greenbaum, Zoe Bennett, and Elizabeth Johnson, music. She owned more of the song than anyone else did.
"You wrote the words, yes."
Andrew shook his head. "But you don't get to decide for the rest of us."
"They have Lydia's permission. Her mother said yes. They have Zoe, and they have me. I think it'll be exciting. And weird, yes, probably really weird. But I think we should do it. I want to do it."
"Why? So you can watch some skinny teenage movie star scream mistress of myself 100 times? Are you that much of a narcissist?"
Andrew's cheeks were starting to flush.
"A narcissist? Because I don't want to stand in the way of someone making a movie about someone else? What are you talking about?"
Andrew pursed his lips and closed his eyes.
"You're really not thinking about the big picture, Lizzie."
"I'm pretty sure I am, actually," Elizabeth said. She turned back around to her chicken. The idea was to rub it with garlic and ginger and to stir-fry it or something. She'd lost her train of thought. Elizabeth heard the front door shut and realized that Andrew had walked out. There were 2 choices, make dinner or not. Who knew what Harry would eat if she didn't cook? And so Elizabeth kept cooking, her blood pressure making her a little fast and loose with the spices. Dried parsley? Why not? Black pepper? Sure. The chicken breasts looked like little Jackson Pollocks as she slid them into the hot pan. She watched the chicken turn from pink to opaque, checking the door every so often to see if Andrew was going to walk back in. She stepped out onto the porch in case he might just be sitting on the front steps, but he wasn't. Debbie from across the street waved, and Elizabeth waved back. Being the neighborhood real estate agent meant never being in a bad mood, never arguing in public. It was like being a very low-level celebrity, where you knew your actions would have repercussions, that people would be watching. Elizabeth retreated back into the house and shut the door. 1/2 hour later, dinner was done, and Andrew still wasn't home.
"Harry, dinner!"
Elizabeth called. She set the table for 3, as usual, even though she seemed to be the only one eating. She wasn't even hungry. After a few minutes, Harry clomped down the stairs, his eyes wide.
"Whoa,"
he said, looking at his dinner plate. He slid into his chair, and Elizabeth into hers, across from him. There were the expressive chicken breasts, plus a shredded carrot and couscous salad.
This looks weird, Mom.
Eat it, Harry, Elizabeth said. She picked up her fork and knife and started shoveling food into her mouth. As she chewed, she felt hungrier and hungrier, as if each bite emptied out her stomach. Harry watched and eventually followed suit.
It's good, he said. Where's Dad?
Elizabeth spoke with her mouth full.
Yoga class. Oh,
Harry said, satisfied. They ate the rest of their meal in silence, both deeply engrossed by their own thoughts. Harry carried his plate over to the garbage and scraped it clean. He put the plate in the sink and ran back upstairs.
I have to pick something up at the grocery store, sweetie, Elizabeth said before he'd completely disappeared. I'll be back in 10 minutes, okay?
She put her plate on top of Harry's in the sink and slipped her feet into her flip-flops. Andrew had said Stratford Road. It was a perfect night, the end of June, when even Brooklyn had to admit that nothing was the matter. It was past 7 and still not yet quite dark. Elizabeth was wearing a t-shirt and the stretchy yoga pants that she wore to bed. She tucked her hair behind her ears as she walked. She hated fighting with her husband. Even now, after so many years together, she sometimes had the thought, abrupt and sharp like a bolt of lightning, that she'd made the wrong decision all those years ago and ruined her entire life. Andrew was smart and serious and handsome. His family money drove him crazy, but it also meant that they never really had to worry, especially about Harry. The Marks money was stretched under Harry's crib like a fireman's net, ready to catch him if necessary. All their friends, if asked, would say that Elizabeth and Andrew were a great couple. They were seamless. They were united. They alley-ooped each other's punchlines at dinner parties. But sometimes she wondered. Probably everyone did. Probably that was marriage. But on the nights when they fought and he walked out the door, which had happened maybe 4 times in their entire relationship, including college, when walking out the door was a much easier feat and wouldn't have required an attorney, Elizabeth was sure that it was over, and that no matter how much she loved her husband, he was lost to her forever. The house on Stratford was easy enough to find. She'd guessed which one it was. Corcoran had sold it. It hadn't been her listing, but she'd been inside it before. Elizabeth rounded the corner from Beverly and walked south. It had been called a fixer-upper, politely. In the office, Deirdre had referred to it as a crack house. It hadn't really been a crack house, at least not officially, but there were boarders and renters and strange locks on all their bedroom doors, with stained carpets. Those were easy fixes, but not everyone could see past them. Elizabeth put her hands on her hips and stopped walking. She was 2 houses away. It was on the left, toward Cortelyou, with a nice white porch that the owners would have to sink about $20,000 into if they wanted to do it right. What was she going to do, walk in? What if he wasn't there? What if he was sitting at the bar at the Hyacinth talking to Jane? What if he'd apologized for overreacting and they were clinking small tumblers full of top-shelf whiskey, complaining about their wives? She was just taking a walk, that was all. Elizabeth tucked her hair behind her ears again and walked the rest of the way to the house. She heard it before she saw anything. Loud music, the kind of music that played in the background of dream sequences in bad television shows, with layers of sitar over something more contemporary. It was dance music, what they used to call techno, electronic and repetitive. It was loud enough that she could hear it from the porch. Surely the neighbors were going to complain once it got late. Ditmas Park was nothing if not swift with a noise complaint. People were dancing. They all looked like sweaty versions of Ruby, twirling themselves around with their eyes closed. Elizabeth nudged herself closer to one of the large windows. There were shades down, but the shades were gauze and it was lighter inside than out. She could make out everything. The main room was crowded with bodies, all of them smiling and jumping. She saw hands on asses, hands on faces, lips on lips. My God, she said out loud, it's a fucking rave. Elizabeth was just about to turn away and walk toward Hyacinth, so sure now that she would find her husband there, tucking into some beautifully prepared dish, and then she saw him. Andrew was drenched in sweat. His t-shirt clung to his thin chest. His head was thrown back, lolling a little bit from side to side. He hadn't danced that way in years. She felt like her very own ghost of husband's past, like she was watching herself and Andrew when they were 19 and on ecstasy and licking each other's faces all night long just because their tongues felt so funny. Only Elizabeth wasn't in the room. She was standing outside it, and she wasn't licking her husband's face. To his credit, no one else was either, But Andrew looked as if any number of the young men and women pressing past him and against him could easily have slipped their little bodies into his mouth, and he wouldn't have objected. This was not the face of propriety. This was not the face of marriage.